who you called, when you called them, where you made the call. From that type of data collected in mass can reveal an awful lot of information about you.
The United States of America has become the United States of surveillance, says former FBI agent Mike German, just one of many ex-intelligence agents fighting back against the eyes and ears of the NSA.
You have Democratic presidents, you have Republican presidents. We all want to know what everybody else is doing. Spying is in the American gene pool.
It may have started in our genes, but as Press TV reveals, it's become a big business.
It turns the whole world against us.
The battle is on between a government that believes it has a right to spy on everyone and a world that is fighting back.
This is the truth. This is what's happening. You should decide whether we need to be doing this.
America's surveillance state. The New York Times is considered America's most powerful newspaper. Its offices near Manhattan's Times Square projects that power for a media institution that often sets the political agenda and tells us what's important. And yet today, there is also fear and loathing inside New York Times newsrooms, where journalists increasingly feel threatened, even intimidated, by an administration that has prosecuted more whistleblowers, eight in all, than any other in American history. In March 2014, the Times Conference Center hosted a forum to address the state of press freedom. Packed, it was like a media summit of major players there to resist the growing power of the surveillance state. Distributed at the event was this 2014 report on attacks on the press. The Committee to Protect Journalists charges that the NSA puts journalists under a cloud of suspicion. We're at the New York Times Center in Manhattan for a conference on sources and secrets. Some of the top journalists in America are here to debate and discuss the growth of the surveillance state in America. Journalists feel threatened. Politicians now feel threatened. This seems to be an issue that's gone from the back pages to the front page. Ralph Engelman works with the Polk Awards, sponsoring a respected awards ceremony in an industry that is far more competitive than collaborative.
Confidentiality of sources is central to the work of journalists, investigative journalists in particular. And in addition to the use of the Espionage Act, what we've learned from the Snowden revelations about the NSA, how can you guarantee confidentiality?
Engelman sees this event not just as a get-together for reporters, but one with an important political mission.
I think there is something that has not been said directly that needs to be said, and that is that the sort of political context for this whole crisis in terms of journalism and surveillance and the use of the Espionage Act of 1917, if you go back to the original Act of 1917, it was passed in large measure to suppress anti-war sentiment against U.S. entry into the war, First World War. It's not simply a question of journalistic practice, but it's also a question of American foreign policy, the ability of journalists and the public to follow what's going on.
At issue today is the case of James Risen, a Times reporter who exposed warrantless wiretapping.
You know, so after we had reported on the story and nailed it down, we went to the government for comment. In fact, I went to Michael Hayden, who was then the director of the NSA, and got him on the phone and told him what we were writing. And before he realized what he was doing, he had given me an on-the-record comment. And then, very quickly after that, and the Bush administration started putting pressure on my editors, demanding that we not run the story.
Former veteran CIA analyst Ray McGovern says that at first there was an effort to suppress Risen's story.
James Risen had this story in the summer of 2004. It was that Dick Cheney and George Bush had told General Hayden to collect everything and forget about this First Amendment at NSA about not collecting on Americans by the court, or just collect everything, okay? Now, that was discovered in the summer of 2004, but the New York Times superiors of James Risen went to the White House and said, and the election is coming up, and so George Bush said, don't, that's national security, terrorism, terrorism, fear, national security, do not publish that story.
The Times initially sat on the report, but then Risen told his boss, publisher Arthur Sulzberger, that this story will be told in his new book. The Times publisher then told the White House the newspaper would be going ahead.
And so Sulzberger calls the White House and says, I'm sorry, we're going to have to publish on that now. Bush orders him into the Oval Office to tell him, no, you can't do that.
He orders the publisher of the New York Times into the White House.
Right. And the publisher of the New York Times and the Washington bureau chief dutifully show up there. And Bush says, you can't do that. Okay. Now, this is the 5th of December, 2005. You can't do that. Okay. And they said, well, you know, hey, we held off for 15 months. For God's sake, you know, you got to understand. So what happened here is that the New York Times caved, and Michael Hayden was asked to explain all this in January of 2006, so 1 month after Risen's revelation. He gets up before the National Press Club, and he's asked by Jonathan Landy, it's on YouTube, General Hayden, why is it that you have sort of played fast and loose with the Fourth Amendment?
Fourth Amendment actually protects all of us against unreasonable search and seizure.
But
that's what it says.
The measure is probable cause, I believe.
The amendment says unreasonable search and seizure.
But does it not say probable?
But the NSA director was wrong. Probable cause is in the Fourth Amendment. But Risen is still being ordered by the courts to reveal his source, and he's resisting, leading to an ongoing clash and a possible jail term.
They're trying to do. They're trying to kind of create a path for accepted reporting, and that if you, as a reporter, go outside those parameters, that you'll be punished, and that the sources that you are trying to deal with will be prosecuted.
Media old-timers like retired Times editor Seymour Topping sees a larger context, too.
We're living in a period of terrorism, of danger on questions affecting national security, and therefore the whole question of the role of the press becomes, and its relationship with the government becomes more and more important. It's important that the public become more and more aware of the problems confronting the press.
Journalists in the building, like Bill Kovich and other former Times bureau chief, were also very conscious of what happened to another building in New York, the World Trade Center, creating the pretext for the rise of massive government spying.
When the Trade Center went down, all bets were off. Who was going to challenge the government? Nobody was. We didn't do it. The press didn't do it. The government had the opportunity, and George W. Bush opened all the doors.
So fast forward to the present day, we have situations where newspapers like the one you work for here are actually willing to work with whistleblowers and bring out information that maybe in the past they wouldn't have done as quickly, although we do have the Pentagon Papers.
And I helped work on the Pentagon Papers. We were ready to do it. The Times was ready to do it at any time if they could confirm the information. You know, we got the Pentagon Papers dumped, but we rented 2 floors of a hotel over here for a month and vetted that data ourselves, so we did our own reporting.
Mr. Ehrlichman, are you telling me that the break-in to Dr. Fielding's office was to satisfy the President of the United States?
The President wanted very much to make sure that a thing like this could not happen again. How one learned whether Ellsberg acted alone, as a disgruntled employee of a think tank, whether he acted as a member of an international spy ring, delivering secrets to a foreign embassy, or just what his role was, where he fit, had to be determined, in the opinion of the investigators, by every available means.
Do you have a sense of mission, which is unusual in journalism, a sense of, you know, you're actually uncovering something of value and importance to the American people?
That's the only reason to be a journalist. I mean, democracy, you know as well as I do, democracy only survives on a population that has the kind of information that allows them to make a decision to help make a democracy work. And if the press doesn't do it, who will?
This is not just an American problem. Journalists in other countries are being spied on, too, by the NSA and their own intelligence agencies, says Tim McNulty.
If you look at journalists in other countries, they risk a great deal more than we risk. We may be, you know, prosecuted, or we may end up with adverse publicity or things like that, but we rarely feel that our lives are threatened, that our livelihoods are threatened, that our families. The journalists in many other countries are not only more aggressive, they're more courageous.
This Sources and Secrets conference included exchanges with representatives of the intelligence community who argued that whistleblowers like Edward Snowden should be in prison.
It is my personal opinion, Jim Risen called me out on this, that people who leak classified information commit crimes, and if we can catch them, which is not always easy, we ought to prosecute them and they ought to go to jail.
Here's Robert Litt, who is general counsel for the Director of National Intelligence.
There are many, many things that the government believes need to be kept secret in the national interest. And there's a full recognition of the fact that the press is almost invariably going to balance that interest different than the government does. And so there's going to be necessarily an adversarial relationship. And the question is, what kind of processes can we set up to ensure that that adversarial relationship is a productive one rather than a destructive one?
The panels also included journalists who have been disseminating and publishing secrets leaked by Snowden, like The Washington Post's Barton Gellman, and independents like Glenn Greenwald and Laura Poitras.
Edward Snowden is a rock star to some. To others, of course, he is a traitor. And here today, via Skype, we have the three journalists who were entrusted by Snowden, chosen by Snowden, to be the recipients of top secret NSA archives. Do you feel it's essential? Do you systematically run by the government, ask for government response on the stories you've done on the Snowden revelations or other stories about the NSA?
We've had a legal framework since, I don't know, the Alien and Sedition Acts and the Espionage Act of 97 years ago, with which a government could prosecute journalists for talking about secrets. And it has been a legal culture, a political culture, that's created the barriers to that.
Greenwald and Poitras have worked directly with leading newspapers to report secrets buried in these documents.
He did not think that he should be in the position to decide which documents ought to be published and which ones ought to be suppressed. He came to well-established and well-regarded newspapers and asked the journalists in those institutions with whom he was working to make those judgments about what is in the public interest to publish and what is not. And specifically, at least to me, said, a lot of what I'm giving you is for background, for context, for understanding. But I don't think all of this should be published. If I just wanted all of this published, I wouldn't need you guys. I could have just uploaded it to the internet myself.
The thing that has, I think, been positive in terms of Snowden's disclosures is that it's reawakened an adversarial press, and that people have been shocked that these decisions about surveillance have been made completely in secret, completely without public debate. And that there does seem to be some kind of an awakening, but I wouldn't call it a shift of the pendulum.
And now, an initially skeptical American media has showered them with top prizes. Greenwald, Poitras, and Gellman won the admired Polk Awards. The next question, would the media honor Edward Snowden's contribution as a whistleblower? In the end, they didn't, but newspapers that carried his leaks did win the even more prestigious Pulitzer Prize.
If
Final question.
These reports were not always picked up or praised because establishment journalism does not trust crusaders like Greenwald and Poitras, says Rory O'Connor of Stony Brook University.
Because they're too independent, and because even as you heard, the editors of the top publications here, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the New Yorker, and so on, all of them said on the panels today, in fact, that they have not been aggressive enough, that they have collaborated perhaps too much with the government in the past. These are the people who run the major media organizations being self-critical and saying, no, we don't need to have more humility, which is what was suggested by Mr. Litt, the representative of the NSA and the CIA. He said that the press needed more humility. I was pleased, at least, that the leaders of the mainstream organization struck back against that and said, no, we don't need more humility. We need more aggressive reporting. And I agree with that.
Before the big prize was given, publications like the magazine Politico framed the challenge facing the powers who run establishment journalism. Wrote media critic Dylan Byers, honoring the NSA reporting would inevitably be perceived as a political act, with the Pulitzer Committee invoking its prestige on behalf of one side in a bitter national argument. Yet to pass on the NSA story would be to risk giving the appearance of timidity. The major media resolved the debate this way. They recognized the Snowden disclosures without recognizing him or the people closest to him. Snowden was magnanimous, saying today's decision is a vindication for everyone who believes that the public has a role in government. We owe it to the efforts of brave reporters and their colleagues who keep working in the face of extraordinary intimidation. Ben Wisner, Snowden's lawyer from the American Civil Liberties Union, also praised the press.
I do think that the last year in particular has been an extraordinary year for journalists, particularly American journalists, that they have been, you know, courageous in standing up in the face of government claims of national security. That they have not ignored those government claims. They have redacted stories where appropriate. But in general, you know, they understood that the balance had tipped far too much towards deference.
As the big media now recognize the value of whistleblowers in the press, other media outlets say they have to be more aggressive in their own reporting and not just rely on documents that are leaked. Jonathan Landay is an investigative reporter for the Washington Bureau of McClatchy Newspapers.
I don't email sources. We just broke the story on the big fight between the CIA and the Senate Intelligence Committee. Most of the groundbreaking work on that was done by a 22-year-old paid freelancer, who did nothing but doorstep committees on the Hill, go to people's homes, got me doing that again, going out at night to visit people. And that's how we were able to do that without sort of like sitting in the office and taking phone calls.
The issues at this conference on the rights of the press also deal with another right, the right of the public to be informed about what governments do in their name. That's the focus of Amy Goodman's concern. Goodman is an anchor of a popular independent daily newscast called Democracy Now!
Information is the oxygen of a democracy. It's not just about participating in democratic processes. It's about being informed. That's what makes democracy meaningful. And when we don't have that information, when a very powerful entity, the government, has the information and the people don't, that is not a very healthy sign. It does not bode well for democracy.
Goodman is a strong believer in the Freedom of Information Act that guarantees access to government information when the act is respected. She cites one current example of the government insisting on keeping secret something that happened 60 years ago. The issue is the U.S. role, if any, in the arrest of South Africa's late leader Nelson Mandela in 1962. Ryan Shapiro, an MIT graduate student, is now suing for the information after the government turned down his request.
Ryan Shapiro, the graduate student at MIT, has sued for more information under the Freedom of Information Act than anyone in U.S. history. And one of the issues he cares deeply about is what happened to Nelson Mandela? How was it that he was picked up in the early 60s? Was it just the South African government, or was Nelson Mandela targeted by the CIA and intelligence given over to the South African apartheid regime? And why is it that something that took place more than half a century ago, we can't learn about today? That is a very serious question. That doesn't have to do with national security. That has to do with embarrassment, and that is not acceptable.
In the end, this is a fight to keep the public informed.
You don't just achieve democracy. People have to fight for it every single day, have to be ever vigilant. So now that the information is out there, and we don't even have all of the information, people have to decide what they want to do, how much power they want to imbue in the government.
So what will come from calls to action like Amy Goodman's and mainstream media conferences decrying the problem?
You know, I think nothing will come out of events like this, honestly, to answer your question. You know, the final panel was entitled, "Where Do We Go From Here?" But actually, there was very, very little of anyone addressing where we go from here. We're at a state here in the United States right now where the press is under attack by the Obama administration, a greater attack than any previous administration. In fact, than all previous administrations rolled together. And so what the question is, where does the media go from here, faced with this attack, faced with the threat of further imprisonment on the part of Times reporters like Jim Risen? You know, the mainstream media themselves are under attack. And I think that one thing I'm hoping you're going to see is a greater unity among the media.
NSA whistleblowers like Russ Tice say that the NSA at first labeled him paranoid to discredit him with the press.
Paranoid is right. They used paranoid. And they did it on purpose, I think, because they realized that if I ever did go to the press, that's exactly what they would say to the press. Because remember, back then, there aren't any. I'm the original NSA, whistleblower with this sort of thing. This is, 2004, 2005 time frame. So, when I finally did come out, that's exactly what they did. They said, you're talking to a crazy guy. Do you want your source to be the crazy guy?
So in other words, even though you had information and speculation that was informed, they basically attempted to discredit you.
Well, of course, yes.
But now whistleblowers are fighting back by working together and getting society and the media to recognize their contribution. Another recent award named after Ron Ridenour, a soldier who exposed the My Lai massacre in Vietnam, in which U.S. soldiers slaughtered villages and children, saluted Ed Snowden and the reporters bringing his documents to the public.
I'm very happy to be here, very honored to be here to make this introduction to two extraordinary people, Laura Poitras and Edward Snowden.
Author James Bamford, the first to expose NSA activities, introduced the winners. A live message by Ed Snowden, now living in exile in Russia, was heard.
Do you think it's right that the NSA is collecting more information about Americans in America than it is about Russians in Russia? Because that's what our systems do. We watch our own people more closely than we watch any other population in the world. Despite the protections, they are policy-based. The technical systems ingest and collect everyone in this room's communication. When you pick up the phone, when you make a call, when you make a purchase, when you buy a book, all of that is collected, and I could see it at my desk crossing my screen.
Former CIA analyst Ray McGovern says that journalists are not the only ones who fear the power of the NSA.
Then you ask about the journalists. You're asking about, well, everybody's afraid. I mean, it's not just the journalists. It's people like Barack Obama. It's people like Dianne Feinstein. Think about what the NSA has on Dianne Feinstein and her husband, who has made billions from defense and post office and all kinds of nice, cozy contracts, okay? So everybody's afraid, not just journalists.
Let me just understand this. You're saying that President Obama, in your opinion, informed opinion, has reasons to fear the power of the NSA, has to be careful in terms of the dance he's done about, yes, he'll reform it, but not too much.
Well, Danny, when you're collecting everything on everybody, You know, who among us is as pure as Caesar's wife? You know, everybody's got something to hide. That's the idiocy of these people to say, I got nothing to hide. You know, well, you know, everyone has things they want to hide.
Coming up next in our surveillance series, the interface between the spy agencies and the technology companies. Can their cooperation be considered complicity in spying? Do they violate the trust of customers? Next.